This call is being recorded.
Hi, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester. I'm the creator and executive producer of the Cooking Without Looking TV show and podcast. And today we are here with Debbie Malone. Debbie, how are you?
I am fantastic. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing great, doing great. We met at the National Federation of the Blind Florida Convention a couple of weeks ago. Did you have a good time there?
Oh, I had such a good time. It was so nice to connect with people that we hadn't been able to see in a long time. Oh, it was just wonderful. It didn't matter how much work we had to put in. It was just fun.
It was. It really, really was. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let me see. Right now I live in Florida, but I was originally born in Massachusetts, and I was born legally blind, so I've had a visual impairment my entire life. I'm one of these people that I make the legally blind limit, so I'm kind of stuck. I'm kind of in the middle person, like
okay.
Two sighted to be blind and two blind to be sighted kind of person.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I'm one of those middle, I call myself a middle person, but I've been embracing the blindness portion of it as I get later on in life. But most of my life, I just functioned well with what that I had. My parents would not let me get away with anything. I was going to do what I wanted, when I wanted. When I wanted to try something, I could try it. They never held me back about it for anything. So I really learned how to be very independent with just the limited eyesight that I have. And then when I was like in my 40s, I was kind of realizing, you know, society is getting a little bit busier. You know, traffic is much more, cars are much faster. So I said, well, I decided I would go get some mobility training and use a white cane. And that way when drivers, I'm crossing the street, they won't think I'm being rude. They really know that I really can't see that well. So
right.
I kind of did it for safety reasons, you know, that, but I hated it. Oh, did I know? I don't know. I just didn't feel comfortable because I was always so used to just being independent. But so it kind of left me out there. But I was using it anyway because I knew I had to be safe. So one day, probably about 3 years after I got my white cane or so, maybe not even that long, I was crossing the street in the crosswalk doing all my mobility stuff I needed to do. And everything was stopped. I go to cross the street, got hit the car and dragged up the street.
Oh, no.
It was really bad. They didn't think I would live through the night. But obviously I did. I am a miracle of God. But, you know, I've always been very active. So even at the time the accident happened, I was involved in disability advocacy, like all over this around the city where I lived. I was on the Board of Commissions for Disability, did a lot of trainings with police officers and voting workers, and just was very involved in advocacy and teaching about disabilities. And, you know, for the government, for churches, I was very, very involved in my church doing dance ministry. So I'm kind of like, God told me this is what I need to do. I'm a blind person leading a visual ministry as dance. So when the accident happened, I was doing all this, and I still am, you know. But God had to wake me up. Really what happened with all that is because eventually I knew I had to bring the advocacy message to more people. So I wanted people to know they could stand up for themselves. And yet I wanted like churches and companies to know this is how you become inclusive of people with disabilities. We all need to live in this world together, and how do we function equally together? So I started writing. So I have 4 books out now that are published. And the first one was actually a memoir about the car accident, kind of what I went through in rehab, even have to advocate for myself in rehab, but not that much because I had a really good rehab place. So that was my first book is about that, about the experience and what I learned. And then I have a set of books that are about organizations and churches and how the things they need to consider to be inclusive of people with disabilities. And that's a textbook sort of thing and a workbook. And then I just published my 4th one, and actually I'm still in the middle of uploading it to Amazon, is called The Expert Advocate. So I teach people how to become a self-advocate. So my life has just been about advocacy, even though that was not what I planned, but I think that's just what God wants me to do. So I'm good. That's a little bit about me.
Well, that is amazing. Yeah. it is interesting because to be an advocate, you have to be very passionate about what's going on and what's happening. And you're, like you said, you're right in the middle. So it's interesting. You're sort of like a translator for both worlds.
That's good. I never thought of it that way, but that's really a good way to put it.
Well, thank you. it's funny because sometimes it seems like advocates, they're either they either have the disability themselves or they have someone in their family that has the disability. But as I said, you're like the translator because you've got sort of like a foot in both worlds. How is that,
I do.
how has that like affected you?
Well, sometimes it's really good in a lot of ways because I can relate to sort of, if you will, both sides. I mean, I don't like to make it both sides because we're not enemies. We all function just
Right.
differently. But I can
Right.
kind of relate to each opinion. And also because I'm a boarder and I'm not totally blind, so blindness is not my only focus. I really started doing advocacy for all types of disabilities. Now, still, even though I'm very involved with the National Federation of the Blind, very involved in blind issues, and service dog issues, because I have a guide dog, so I'm involved in a lot of that. I also don't limit my advocacy to just that. I believe we need to help all people with all disabilities. We all have a lot of similar things that are going on that we need help with for each other. Like someone who might be a wheelchair user. Like when I was in Massachusetts, we had this program called Community Access Monitoring. So I was certified in that. So what we do is, if we go to a restaurant, let's say, and they don't provide wheelchair access to part of the restaurant, like maybe it's two floors and they don't have an elevator, let's say. According to ADA, they're supposed to be able to have access for people who are wheelchair users need to have access to all the floors as well. So we would go advocate for that, for them to put in the elevator, and there was a whole system. You have to go to the access board and different things. But so I learned a lot about different disabilities, and I advocate for people of all disabilities. Something comes up and I say, well, that's not quite right. Let's see what we can do, rather than focus on just the visual sort of stuff.
Yes. That happens to us too, because our focus, pun intended, has been on people with vision issues, low vision, no vision. But if someone comes to us for help, and maybe they're in a wheelchair, maybe there's some other issue that they're having. I'm not going to turn someone away and say, go, well, I'm sorry, you're not blind, so we're not going to help you. I think you and I are on the same page. We're humanists. We just help.
Yes, that's a good word, but yes, we're all in this together. We're all human beings. We all need to function together in this world. And the more we can bridge the gaps, the better off we all are.
Exactly. So what's the funniest thing that anyone's ever said to you? Regarding blindness or vision.
Not sure the funniest thing someone ever said. I mean, my brother and I, he's legally blind too, and he and I have laughed about the fact that when it's sunny and before I got my cane, we'd bang into poles. We laugh about it because, oh yeah, because if you can't see that well and you get the sun in your face, you're going to bang into a light pole or in some streets and that gives a light pole in the middle of the sidewalk. Don't ask me why they do this. In the middle of the sidewalk, of course we'd bump into it. So we would laugh about that because it really is kind of funny. And I think laughing at yourself is healthy because you're not taking it so seriously. When I was younger, anything that I didn't like that wasn't like everybody else, I would feel like embarrassed or whatever. But as I've grown into adulthood, I'm like, you know what? Oh well. Even people who are completely sighted will bang into a light pole. I mean, really. So anyway, we've gotten to laugh about it because we say, hey, it is funny. Okay. So, I
It
mean,
is.
you just have to learn. I don't remember anything specific that someone would say to me that's really funny about blindness, but I just laugh at myself. My brother and I do that together because we're like, hey, it is what it is.
Well, yeah, you know what? a lot of times people don't realize that this makes sense. If you put a light pole, like you say, a sighted person would run into a light pole in the middle of the sidewalk because you're not expecting it there. So maybe you're talking or laughing or looking somewhere else, and all of a sudden, boom, there's a light pole.
Exactly. But if you're a blind person and you go bang into a light pole, it's different. Like, people would be like, you know, like, oh, you're blind. So, well, you know, they would like laugh at you, but we've learned to laugh with it. And I think that's important in life, is just, hey, yeah, even if people are not always nice, can be very rude. They can be, I grew up with a lot of bullying. But it's actually made me stronger, because I'm like, you know, damn, I am not going to let those crazy bullies bother me. It took me a lot of years to get there, but that has actually helped me to be stronger in my advocacy. I'll tell you a story. The first time I ever advocated for myself without anybody saying anything is when I was in high school, and I had a history teacher. Now, you're not going to even believe this. So I had a history teacher, and I'm in 11th grade, and he used to make fun of me in class. Make fun of, like, I blinked my eyes a lot, so he would make fun of that, and he would just make rude remarks, and he was actually the coach of the basketball team. He was this jock, and he could make fun of the blind girl and the whole bit. Well, you know, I kind of put up with it, and sometimes he would say things, and I would just comment back and say, oh, he would say stuff like, it's a good thing you can't see me, and I'd be, oh, yeah, but Mr. Green, I can, and, you know, little things, but it still bothered me, but I just left it alone until he gave an unfair midterm exam, and he knows that because of being visually impaired, I can't write as fast as everybody else. You know, it takes a lot more to write, physically write things out. So he gave a 2-question midterm exam, and you had to complete both questions completely to get 100. Well, because I don't write as fast, I only got 1 question done in the period. And I didn't even get to start the second question. So he gave me a 50, which means I got everything right on that 1 question. But I thought that was an unfair test. And it was something that nobody had to tell me. It was something innate inside me that said, no, this is really not right. I'm not feeling comfortable with this. First of all, I'm a good student. I don't want to have a 50 on my grade at all, okay? But second of all, I really did feel like that was an unfair test. So I went to my guidance counselor, told my guidance counselor what had been happening all these weeks in the semester, and then this is what happened with the midterm, and I don't think it was a fair one because of my eyesight. I can't write like everybody else, and I think he knew that, and he did it intentionally. And my guidance counselor said, you know what? You're right. So he was forced to give me 100 on my midterm, and he was forced to not make fun of me in class. So, but I know he still was, but it wasn't as obvious, because he thought he was a basketball coach. He was a jock. He could do whatever. So then the next year, I had a class next to his class, and my brother was in that class, and all the basketball players. My brother was actually the captain of the basketball team, and this teacher was the coach, but they didn't realize that I was Jimmy's sister. So that I'm walking down the hall in front of this class. Now, my brother has his class the next year, and the teacher was making fun, and the basketball players were making fun of me. And my brother turned around and he said, and he swore, though I won't swear. He said, UMF, that happens to be my sister. And if you say anything to her or about her again, I'm going to beat you up. I'm like, hey, I just turned around. I looked, I went up to my class, and I'm like, oh my God, my brother stood up for me. I don't think he realized how bad it was for me until he saw that. Then he really stood up for me. So then after that, none of them made fun of me. I was okay. Because the captain of the basketball team said, knock it off, that's my sister. And so it was good after that.
Wow, what a great brother standing up for you.
Yeah. But I had to stand up to that teacher first, too. I had to get the courage to advocate for myself against that teacher before anything else. And then it made things easier as I grew up and went into adulthood to advocate for myself and eventually for other people. So now I mostly advocate for other people. I'm not saying I don't advocate for myself, because I've been denied access with my guide dog. So that's recently even. Because that's where all those skills. Yeah, I actually went to a job. I was going to a job interview sent my resume. They called me. They wanted me to come in for an interview. I get there with my guide dog, and they refuse to let me in the building. And then the this guy's asking me questions. Oh, is that a service dog? Well, yes. Do you have papers?
No, I don't need papers.
Well, you can't have that dog in here because dogs bring disease. And I said, it's very common. Well, you can't refuse me. And then there's a lady that had to go get the person that I was interviewing with. And she came out, she said, oh, the person that you're supposed to have the interview with said she's allergic to dogs, so she can't see you. And I said, I believe that's just an excuse. You haven't heard the end of this. And I turned around and I walked out very quietly. Let me tell you, I want to yell at some people. But I was like, nope, I'm just going to keep my cool. Well, right now we have a lawsuit. They want to do mediation because they know they're wrong. They know that now they know that legally they couldn't do that. So I don't know what's going to happen, but it's still in process. We filed a complaint with the EOC because it was a job-related situation. They refused. They didn't even offer me another way to interview at all. So they didn't say, hey, they just didn't want the dog. They didn't want to deal with, and you know what's worse? This was an assisted living facility. So I would working, I was being a secretary, like basically, but working in a facility with Alzheimer's patients and stuff like that. So you would think that sort of a place would get the whole disability sort of thing. And plus the fact that older people and people who have dementia and stuff, dogs, they just react well to dogs. That it's a good positive thing, to have an animal around. And it's not a negative thing for these type of situations. And it's been proven over and over again. All therapy dogs for this population has been so beneficial. And for them to even deny, I mean, obviously my dog's not a therapy dog. She's a working guide dog, but just the presence of a dog can be beneficial for people. So they missed out on all that too. So, oh, well, I'm still pursuing it. Yeah. Yeah, but, those kinds of things still happen today. And I don't think people realize how much they happen. And it's surprising in 2021 that these things are happening. The ADA has been in effect for 31 years now.
And it still happens. People don't know.
They don't know. It's really sad that it still happens to people.
It is. It's like no matter how much you try and bring understanding, there's always going to be some people who don't understand.
And then there's the people that don't want to understand.
Right, right. It's just all about them.
Unfortunately, we have those people in this world. We just do our best to love on them anyway.
That's right. Well, speaking of love on, I loved your recipe. Tell us a little bit about your recipe.
Well, I love eggs. Okay, I'm crazy. So I wanted to find a different way to cook eggs. Maybe a few months ago, and I said, "Well," and I love Velveeta cheese, and I had this thing of Velveeta cheese, and I had the eggs. I'm like, let me see if I can find a breakfast casserole that uses the Velveeta cheese, and most likely use eggs. And I found a whole bunch. But the one that I sent you, it was so easy, and I never make it the same anytime. Ever. I got the basic recipe, how much Velveeta, how many eggs, that kind of thing. But sometimes I'll put sausage, sometimes I'll put bacon. I made it just the other day, and I have a picture to send you of it. And I had made it with bacon, but no, I didn't make it with any hash browns or potatoes. So I've made it with hash browns, I made it without. I just, whatever I happen to have in the fridge at the time, or, in the cabinet, I feel like, oh, let's pull out a can of mushrooms and throw that in there.
Well, Debbie,
it's one of those things you can be creative with easily.
You sure can. Well, just go over the recipe for our listeners.
Okay, so basically you take 8 eggs and some milk and some salt and pepper, and you beat them all up like you're going to do scrambled eggs. And then you have like already cooked bacon or sausage. And then the other day I did mushrooms. And then you have like a half a pound of Velveeta cheese. And I like Velveeta cheese, but you can also make this recipe with any other kind of cheese. But to make it cheesy, you got to put a lot of cheese in there. So you put spray the bottom of the pan. Like I use like a 9x12 baking pan for it. And I spray the bottom so it doesn't stick after it cooks. And then I put a layer of maybe a little bit of the bacon or the sausage, those types of things. I put a little bit of the eggs, and then I put the cheese. And it all ends up melting all together, but when you do the layers, it tends to, the meats go more all the way through the eggs than being settled on the bottom. So I don't make the layers so every section is filled. I just kind of put the hamburger, all the bacon or whatever it is, put the vegetables, pour some eggs, then put some of the cheese, and then do the same thing over again. And it all just kind of gets in together. So it looks like there's not even a purpose to the layers, but there kind of is. bake it for 45 minutes. And all the cheese gets mixed in, and if you do the layers right, you're going to be having like some bacon all the way through it. Like if you're using bacon or if you're using sausages, all the way through it when you do the layers. If you don't do different layers, it kind of is all at the bottom, which is okay too. You know, it's one of those things you really can't mess up unless you burn it. And even then, you can take the crust off and eat the inside.
Oh boy. Well, if for any of you who want to look at the recipe, we have it on our website. It's Debbie Malone's Velveeta Breakfast Casserole, and it's at www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. And again, that's www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com for Debbie Malone's Velveeta Breakfast Casserole. So it's delicious. What other things do you like to make?
I really try to make anything, a lot of different kinds of things. Sometimes people will give me food that I never had before. Like the other day, somebody gave me eggplant. And I'm like, okay, I know I've had it before. Let me just figure it out. So I always like to try something new. And I'll take the eggplant and I'll make eggplant. Plant Parmesan. So I'll look up a recipe, and I won't always follow the recipe. I might do things a little bit different. A friend of mine told me how a nice way to make that eggplant with like a layered thing. It's almost like a lasagna with the eggplant. It's so good. I just try different things. Let me see. What else do I really like? Oh, corn chowder. That's so easy. And I like to make that a lot. And it's cheap. It's cheap too. Okay. So when you need to have something you need a lot of, you do your regular corn, some cream style corn, some milk, and some potatoes and onions. Oh, so good.
Oh my God, that does sound great. Well, let me ask you something. You talked about, you know, where it was difficult and you were trying to go with your guide dog into a job interview. What do you think have been some of the positive changes for the attitudes towards blindness?
Well, I think, honestly, having the guide dog has really been beneficial because, for me, anyway, from my experience, the white cane, people are afraid to say the wrong thing when you just have a white cane. This is just from my experience. When right. I had using just that, they kind of like were standoffish because they didn't want to say the wrong thing, and so they say nothing. But with the dog, it kind of is a buffer, and it gets people to say, oh, what a beautiful dog. And then we can get into a conversation. It's more open. It's more friendly because people like dogs rather than the white cane because they don't know. But the dog, it kind of is a buffer.
It sort of breaks the ice, isn't it? That's a really good point.
It really, really does. It really does. And I think, too, if we have the positive attitude and we're friendly people, it's going to help people. Whether we use a white cane or nothing, it's going to help people. Because if we're positive in general, then it's going to help people around us to be positive. But if we're kind of like grumpy and like, oh, poor me, I can't see that well, whatever. And
how
we
dare
all
you ask
times.
That?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all have our times when we go through tough times with it all. It's normal. But if in general, you kind of have a down in the dumps kind of feel, and people aren't going to be friendly, and then they're not going to learn. They're not going to be open to learning. So for me, if I'm a friendly person and I accept, you know, people for who they are, no matter where they are in life, that makes them more comfortable with me as a blind person to feel like they can be comfortable just talking to me and be friendly or whatever.
Well, you know, that's a really good point. I think a lot of times people are nervous, like you say, to ask a blind person something, but I've been doing this for 20 20 years now, and I have never had one person, you know, yell back at me or say something like, why did you ask that? Or why did you? Usually people are extremely happy to explain.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Very happy to explain. You know, and, yes. And then if people are asking questions, that's a good thing. Instead of ignoring the person or ignoring what's going on, if they ask a question, that's a real positive thing because that means they really want to know.
Right, right. And there's nothing wrong with people wanting to know because that's how they learn and that's how changes are made in our society.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Debbie, if someone wants to reach out to you for more recipes or just wanting to say hi or they want to buy one of your books, how do they reach you?
Well, my email is vmalone510@gmail. I also have a website called inclusioneducation.com. You can get more information about me and the services I offer. And my books are on there as well, and they're on Amazon under just say Debbie Malone as the author. And the titles of them are Unlikely Dancer, Unlikely Dancer 2, and Unlikely Dancer Workshop, and The Expert Advocate, Self-Advocacy for People with Disabilities. So those are the books, and they're on Amazon. And my email address is vmalone510@gmail. And what else can I tell you? InclusionEducation.com. That's my website.
Say that again, Debbie.
InclusionEducation.com is my website.
Okay,
great. Or even if you just look up DebbieMalone.org, it comes up to the same thing, too.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. So there are lots of ways to get a hold of you. Well, Debbie,
oh, yeah, tons of ways.
Debbie, it's been really wonderful speaking with you today, and it was wonderful meeting you a couple of weeks ago at the Florida NFB convention. And as we like to say, thank you for helping us change the way we see blindness. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Well, Renee, thank you so much for having me. It's been a joy chatting with you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And you have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.